Hello there, GWA. I know that I've been reminded a few times that I owe you a JOI, but I just have not been feeling it. I've tried it a few times and it's not working, but I've been wanting to record, so I'm going to do a hysterical literature reading. I'm going to be reading from Delta of Venus by Anais Nin. Was stories that she was actually paid to write, and published after she died. It's smaller chapters of short stories. So maybe if this goes well, I can do a series. Some of this may be difficult for me because there are some French words which I have no idea how to pronounce. But let's see how it goes. Manuel had developed a peculiar form of enjoyment that caused his family to repudiate him, and he lived like a bohemian in Montparnasse. When not obsessed with his erotic exigencies, he was an astrologer, an extraordinary cook, a great conversationalist, and an excellent cafe companion. But not one of those occupations could divert his mind from his obsession. Sooner or later, Manuel had to open his pants and exhibit his rather formidable member. The more people there were, the better. The more refined the party, the better. If he got among the painters and models, he waited until everybody was a little drunk and gay, and then he undressed himself completely. His ascetic face, dreamy and poetic eyes, and lean, monk-like body were so much in dissonance with his behavior that it startled everyone. If they turned away from him, he had no pleasure. If they looked at him for any time at all, then he would fall into a trance, his face would become ecstatic, and he would soon be rolling on the floor in a crisis of orgasm. Women tended to run from him. He had to beg them to stay and resorted to all kinds of tricks. He would pose as a model and look for work in women's studios. But the condition he got into as he stood there under the eyes of the female students made the men throw him out into the street. If he were invited to a party, he would first try to get one of the women alone somewhere in an empty room or on a balcony. Then he would take down his pants. If the woman was interested, he would fall into ecstasy. If not, he would run after her with his erection and come back to the party and stand there, hoping to create curiosity. He was not a beautiful sight, but a highly incongruous one. Since the penis did not seem to belong to the austere religious face and body, it acquired a greater prominence, as it were, an apartness. He finally found the wife of a poor literary agent who was dying of starvation and overwork, with whom he reached the following arrangement. He would come in the morning and do her housework for her, wash her dishes, sweep her studio, run errands on condition that when all this was over, he could exhibit himself. In this case, he demanded all her attention. He wanted her to watch him unfasten his belt, unbutton his pants, pull them down. He wore no underwear. He would take out his penis and shake it like a person weighing a thing of value. She had to stand near him and watch every gesture. She had to look at his penis as he would look at food she liked. This woman developed the art of satisfying him completely. She would become absorbed in the penis, saying, "It's a beautiful penis you have there, the biggest I have seen in Montparnasse. It's so smooth and hard. It's beautiful." As she said these words, Manuel continued to shake his penis like a pot of gold under her eyes, and saliva came to his mouth. He admired it himself. As they both bent over to admire it, his pleasure would become so keen that he would close his eyes and be taken with a bodily trembling from head to foot, still holding his penis and shaking it under her face. Then the trembling would turn to undulation, and he would fall on the floor and roll himself into a ball as he came, sometimes all over his own face. Often he stood at dark corners of the streets, naked under an overcoat, and if a woman passed, he opened his coat and shook his penis at her. But this was dangerous, and the police punished such behavior rather severely. Oftener still, he liked to get into an empty compartment of a train, unbutton two of the buttons, and sit back as if he were drunk or asleep, his penis showing a little through the opening. People would come in at other stations. If he were in luck, it might be a woman who would sit across from him and stare at him. As he looked drunk, usually no one tried to wake him. Sometimes one of the men would rouse him angrily and tell him to button himself. Women did not protest. If a woman came in with little schoolgirls, then he was in paradise. He would have an erection, and finally the situation would become so intolerable, the woman and her little girls would leave the compartment. One day, Manuel found his twin in this form of enjoyment. He had taken his seat in a compartment alone and was pretending to fall asleep when a woman came in and sat opposite him. She was a rather mature prostitute, as he could see from the heavily painted eyes, the thickly powdered face, the rings under her eyes, the overcurled hair, the worn-down shoes, the coquettish dress and hat. Through half-closed eyes, he observed her. She took a glance at his partly open pants and then looked again. She too sat back and appeared to fall asleep, with her legs wide apart. When the train started, she raised her skirt completely. She was naked underneath. She stretched open her legs and exposed herself while looking at Manuel's penis, which was hardening and showing through the pants, and which finally protruded completely. They sat in front of each other, staring. Manuel was afraid the woman would move and tried to get hold of his penis, which was not what he wanted at all. But no, she was addicted to the same passive pleasure. She knew he was looking at her sex under the very black and bushy hair, and finally they opened their eyes and smiled at each other. He was entering his ecstatic state, but he had time to notice that she was in a state of pleasure herself. He could see the shining moisture appear at the mouth of the sex. She moved almost imperceptibly to and fro, as if rocking herself to sleep. His body began to tremble with voluptuous pleasure. She then masturbated in front of him, smiling all the time. Manuel married this woman, who never tried to possess him in the way of other women. Oh. 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 Very short chapter. A short story. Oh, fuck. Oh, God. Oh. Linda stood in front of her mirror, examining herself critically in full daylight. Now past 30, she was becoming concerned with her age, though nothing about her betrayed any lessening of her beauty. She was slender, youthful in appearance. Oh, she could well deceive everyone but herself. Oh, fuck. In her own eyes, her flesh was losing some of its firmness, some of that marble smoothness that she had admired so often in her own mirror. She was no less loved. If anything, she was more loved than ever, because now she attracted all the young men who sense that it is from such a woman that they will really learn the secrets of lovemaking, and who feel no attraction to the young girls of their age who are backward, innocent, inexperienced, and still possessed by their families. Oh, God damn it. Linda's husband, a handsome man of 40, had loved her with the fervor of a lover for many years. He closed his eyes to her young admirers. He believed that she did not take them seriously, that her interest was due to her childlessness and the need to pour her protective feelings over people who were beginning to live. He himself was reputed to be a seducer of women of all classes and character. God damn it. She remembered that on her wedding night, Andre had been with an adoring lover, worshipping each part of her body separately, as if she were a work of art, touching her and marveling, commenting on her ears, her feet, her neck, her hair, her nose, her cheeks, and her thighs as he fondled them. His words and voice, his touch, opened her fresh like a flower into the heat and light. He trained her to be a sexually perfect instrument, to vibrate to every form of caress. God damn it. Once he taught her to put the rest of her body to sleep, as it were, and to concentrate all her erotic feelings in her mouth, then she was like a woman half-drugged, lying there, her body quiet and languid, and her mouth, her lips, became another sex organ. Andre had a particular passion for the mouth. In the street, he looked at women's mouths. Oh, God. To him, the mouth was indicative of the sex, the tightness of a lip. Oh, God damn it. Tightness of a lip, thinness, augured nothing rich or voluptuous. A full mouth promised an open, generous sex. A moist mouth tantalized him. A mouth that opened out. A mouth that was parted as if ready for a kiss. He would follow doggedly in the street until he could possess the woman and prove again his conviction of the revelatory powers of the mouth. Linda's mouth had seduced him from the first. He had a perverse, half-dolorous expression. It had a perverse, half-dolorous expression. There was something about the way she moved, a passionate unfolding of the lips, promising a person who would lash around the beloved like a storm. When he first saw Linda, oh, he was taken to her through his mouth, as if he were already making love to her. And so it was on their wedding night. He was obsessed with her mouth. Oh, fuck. It was on her mouth that he threw himself. Oh, kissing it until it burned. Until the tongue was worn out. Until the lips were swollen. And then, when he had fully aroused her mouth, it was thus that he took her, crouching over her, his strong hips pressed against her breasts. He never treated her as a wife. He wooed her over and over with presents, flowers, new pleasure. He took her to dinner at the cabinet particulars of Paris to the big restaurants where all the waiters thought she was his mistress. He chose the most exciting food and wine for her. He made her drunk with his caressing words. He made love to her mouth. He made her say that she wanted him. Then he would ask, "And how do you want me? What part of you wants me tonight?" Sometimes she answered, "My mouth wants you. I want to feel you in my mouth, way deep down in my mouth." Other times she answered, "I am moist between the legs." This is how they talked across restaurant tables in the small private dining rooms created especially for lovers. How discreet the waiters. Oh, fuck, knowing when not to return. Music would come from an invisible source. There would be a divan, and when the meal was served, and Andre had pressed Linda's knees between his and stolen kisses, he would take her on the divan with her clothes on, like lovers who do not have time to undress. He would escort her to the opera and to theaters, famed for their dark boxes, and make love to her while they watched a spectacle. He would make love to her in taxis, in a barge anchored in the front of Notre Dame that rented cabins to lovers. Everywhere but home, on the marital bed, he would drive her to little far-off villages and stay at romantic inns with her. He would take a room for them in the luxurious houses of prostitution he had known. Then he would treat her like a prostitute. He would make her submit to his whims, ask to be whipped, ask her to crawl on her hands and knees, and not to kiss him, but to pass her tongue all over him like an animal. These are practices aroused her such... Oh, fuck. Oh, God damn it. I may have just given myself a concussion. Ow, I'm sitting up. I just hit my head against my headboard. Fuck. Oh my God. Whew. These practices had aroused her sensuality to such a degree that she was frightened. She was afraid of the day when Andre would cease to be sufficient for her. Her sensuality, she knew, vigorous. His was the last burst of a man who had spent himself on a life of excess and now gave her the flower of it. This is a much longer story, so I will end there. That can be the start of chapter 2 of the series. Oh, God, I feel good. Well, thank you for listening. I hope you liked it. Let me know if I should continue. Thanks. Bye.